The overall death rates, 1 in 33, among African elected leaders from COVID are 7 times the rates for their sex and age and demographics of the general population during that time period. I do not endorse the theory that these men were murdered, nor do I dismiss such speculation out of hand. It is naive to believe that powerful men and women who threaten a trillion-dollar industry allied with Western military and intelligence agencies do so without risk. I document the keen interest by the Western intelligence community and militaries in the African vaccine enterprise in Chapter 12, Germ Games. The historic involvement of Western intelligence agencies in coups and the murders of African leaders on behalf of their corporate clientele is well documented. I have a clear personal memory of the shocked reaction by my father and my uncle John Kennedy to the assassination of Congo's liberator Patrice Lumumba on my birthday, January 17, 1961, a week before my uncle John Kennedy's inauguration as U.S. president. JFK regarded Lumumba as the George Washington of the Congo. U.S. and European mining companies had their eyes on the Congo's vast mineral wealth, and Lumumba, a beloved nationalist who led the Congo's liberation movement against Belgium, had sworn to deploy that wealth instead to benefit the Congolese people. We have since learned that the CIA and the Belgian intelligence agencies collaborated in Lumumba's murder. In 2002, Belgium formally apologized for its role in the assassination. CIA Director Alan Dulles, who planned to kill Lumumba with poison toothpaste, knew that my uncle had enormous affection and admiration for Lumumba. Dulles feared that JFK would interfere with the CIA's plan to liquidate the charismatic leader. Among other mischief, the CIA overthrew governments in Ghana in 1966 and Chad in 1982. Congressional investigations in the 1970s exposed the CIA's years of experimentation to develop untraceable poisons and secretive murder tools. CIA scientists, including NIH brain surgeon Maitland Baldwin, working under MKUltra's director Sidney Gottlieb at Fort Detrick, concocted a diabolical arsenal of assassination weaponry, including beamed radio frequency radiation, pathogenic microbes, and dissipating chemicals, all intended to mimic natural deaths. This armory of toxins gave the agency capacity to assassinate uncooperative foreign leaders while avoiding suspicion. Such shenanigans suggest that it is our duty as citizens to remain alert to the times democracy might lose control of rogue intelligence agencies. Dr. Gates, I presume. Media recipients of pharma advertising dollars and Gates Foundation lucre like to characterize Gates as a public health expert. But 6 years after Gates summoned Dr. Fauci to his Seattle mansion, two Los Angeles Times investigative reporters, Charles Piller and Doug Smith, employed the term white man's burden to describe the catastrophic impact of Gates's medical meddling in Africa. That title suggests that Gates' efforts to rescue the dark races from disease and famine mask all the familiar impulses for imperial control. The comprehensive study provides eloquent testimony to the lethal effect of Gates's natal arrogance on children. Piller and Smith detail how Gates's systematic diversion of Africa's international medical spending to his high-tech, high-price, and often untested vaccines is killing babies across Africa. Gates's prioritization of vaccines has dried the stream of foreign assistance that once flowed to basic nutrition and that financed the cheap, functional medical devices that could prevent many deaths. The team at the Los Angeles Times documents how in a single Lesotho hospital, one or two babies die from asphyxiation every day for lack of a $35 oxygen valve. That life-saving valve is outside the purview of Gates's $400 million annual vaccine giving, almost all of which goes to HIV, polio, TB, and malaria vaccines. Gates's regimen has also deprioritized the off-patent malaria medicines like hydroxychloroquine that could prevent half of all malaria deaths at 12 cents per dose, as well as $4 mosquito nets that can spare a child from contracting malaria. It estimates that $3 of food and conventional medicines to each new mother could prevent 5 million child deaths annually. The Times investigation found that Gates's programs, including those of the Global Fund and the Gavi Alliance, have had net negative consequences on public health. In fact, the Times found an inverse correlation between dollars spent by Gates's charities and declines in children's health. The nations that get the most Gates money see the worst health outcomes. By narrowing the focus of international relief aid to fund pharma solutions to a handful of celebrity diseases, Gates has not only reduced public expenditures on basic equipment and life-saving food and water, he has pulled many of the best healthcare workers and researchers away from life-saving basic care. The LA Times quotes leaders in half a dozen sub-Saharan African nations facing desperate shortages while doctors and nurses chase extravagant salaries that Gates's Global Fund pays to clinicians who provide antiretroviral drug therapy, known as ART, for HIV/AIDS patients. The resulting staff shortages have abandoned many children of AIDS survivors to more common killers, birth sepsis, diarrhea, and asphyxia. In Rwanda, the Los Angeles Times reports, nurses earning $50 to $100 a month in local clinics work beside Gates-supported nurses earning $175 to $200 a month. All over the country, people are furious about incentives for ART staff, said Rachel M. Cohen, who is Doctors Without Borders' Lesotho mission chief. Her organization staffs the government health clinics. The Los Angeles Times concludes that Gates's obsession with vaccine-preventable diseases has proportionally reduced assistance streams for nutrition, transportation, hygiene, and economic development, causing negative overall impacts on public health. Many AIDS patients have so little food that they vomit their free AIDS pills. For lack of bus fare, others cannot get to clinics that offer life-saving treatment. The Gates Foundation addresses these catastrophic impacts on broader health concerns by blocking Africans from talking about any problem that is not susceptible to a vaccine solution. According to the report, Gates-funded vaccination programs have instructed caregivers to ignore, even discourage patients from discussing, ailments that the vaccinations cannot prevent. This is especially harmful in outposts where a visit to a clinic for a shot is the only contact some villagers have with healthcare providers for years. WHO, Gavi, and the Global Fund effectively function as ideological commissars enforcing Gates's vanity priorities. The Times reporter found that their oversight has caused key measures of societal health to have stalled at appalling levels or worsened. Gates's claim that his vaccines have saved several million lives is a reflexive trope for which he offers no proof, no validation, and no accountability. Most of the preeminent decision-makers and advisors in the Gates organization are former pharmaceutical industry moguls and regulators who not surprisingly share his pharma-centric worldview. For example, Dr. Tadataka Yamada, an unsavory bully who served as president of the Gates Foundation's Global Health Program from 2005 to 2011, was the former research director for GlaxoSmithKline. He left GSK just a few steps ahead of a U.S. Senate Finance Committee seeking to question him about multiple accusations that he conducted an intimidation campaign to threaten and silence prominent doctors exploring the British drug maker for knowingly killing some 83,000 Americans with its blockbuster diabetes drug, Avandia. Gates knew of Yamada's sordid conduct because the Senate committee staffers sent his foundation a letter requesting Yamada submit to questioning. A 2007 article by one of these staffers, Alicia Mundy, describes how Yamada repeatedly lied to his interrogators. Yamada's successor at BMGF, Trevor Mundell, was an executive at both Novartis and Pfizer. The foundation's chief communications officer, Kate James, worked at GSK for almost 10 years. Penny Heaton worked for Merck and Novartis before Gates named her as director of vaccine development at BMGF. So it's not surprising that Gates's success metrics rarely measure better health outcomes, but only the number of vaccines administered and the number of pills distributed and consumed. Many believe that the Global Fund's tight remit is increasingly becoming a straitjacket, complains a 2007 editorial on the Global Fund in the Lancet Infectious Diseases. The failure to support basic care as comprehensively as vaccines and research is a blind spot for the Gates Foundation, said Paul Farmer, recipient of a John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Fellowship and founder of Partners in Health, which has received Gates Foundation funding for research and training. It doesn't surprise me that as someone who has made his fortune on developing a novel technology, Bill Gates would look for magic bullets in vaccines and medicines, Farmer said. But if we don't have a solid delivery system, this work will be thwarted. He added, that's something that's going to be hard for the big foundations. They treat tuberculosis. They don't treat poverty. African public health leaders protest that Gates refuses to finance traditional medical supplies that spell life or death in African clinics. Lesotho's health minister, Empura Matlapeng, now executive vice president of the Clinton Foundation, told The Times that a $7 million annual donation would allow her to raise the pay of every government health professional by two-thirds, sufficient to retain most of them. But this sort of banal need bores Mr. Gates. His Global Fund has poured $59 million into Lesotho to advance his priorities, which are the high-profit vaccines and drugs that enrich his pharma partners. Dr. Fauci and Gates's obsession with AIDS is great for companies like Merck and Glaxo, with which the two men partner, but it's been a lousy deal for Africans. Like Dr. Fauci, Gates raises expectations yet takes no responsibility and offers no convincing proof that his schemes have had a beneficial impact on morbidities, public health, or quality of life. There are meager signs of tangible benefits to the poor. Instead, every effort to measure the health outcomes of Gates's interventions has exposed them as cataclysmic for their beneficiaries. In 2017, the Danish government commissioned a study of health outcomes among African children who received WHO's flagship DTP vaccine, the world's most popular inoculation. They found that vaccinated girls had 10 times the death rate compared to unvaccinated girls. The investigation by the Los Angeles Times found that Botswana, a favored target of Gates's and his corporate amigos' largesse, has seen few tangible benefits from the attention. Botswana is a stable, well-governed democracy with a relatively high living standard and a small population, but one of the world's highest HIV infection rates. In 2000, the Gates Foundation partnered with Merck to launch a $100 million pilot program in Botswana to showcase how mass AIDS treatment with vaccines, patented antivirals, and prevention could eliminate AIDS in Africa. The pilot's disastrous failure instead became a parable for how Gates's obsession with expensive pharmaceuticals is killing Africans. The project produced no reduction in HIV rates. By 2005, the virus had spread to a quarter of all adults. All those deadly retrovirals and vaccines from Tony Fauci's little shop of horrors exacted a fearsome toll on Botswana's mothers and infants. The rate of pregnancy-related maternal deaths nearly quadrupled, and child mortality rose dramatically. Health economist Dean Jameson, formerly editor of the Gates Foundation-funded reference book, Disease Control Priorities in Developing Countries, acknowledged that the Gates Foundation's narrow obsession with AIDS drugs may have accelerated death and illness in Botswana by drawing the nation's top medical professionals away from primary care and child health. They have an opportunity to double or triple their salaries by working on AIDS, Jameson said. Maybe the health ministry replaces them when they leave government service. Maybe not. The Gates Foundation has poured billions into sub-Saharan Africa through the Global Fund to finance vaccines and antivirals for AIDS and TB treatment for 3.9 million people. But one AIDS patient, Moleko, told The Times, "The clinics don't have what we need. Food." Majubili Mathibalai, the nurse at Queen 2 Hospital who gives Moleko her pills, wept in frustration as she told The Times reporter that 4 out of 5 of her patients ate fewer than 3 meals a day. Most of them, she said, are dying of hunger. In Lesotho and Rwanda, dozens of patients described hunger so brutal that nausea prevented them from keeping their anti-AIDS pills down. Nathibalai said that Gates's Global Fund was out of touch. "They have their computers in nice offices and are comfortable," she said, nervous about speaking bluntly, "but they are not coming down to our level. We've got to tell the truth so something will be done." Dr. Jennifer Furin, the Lesotho Director for Partners in Health, a Boston-based NGO, made a similar complaint. "By giving African patients medicine without food," she said, "you're consigning that person to death because they are poor." Antipathy toward locally controlled healthcare systems. Dr. Francis Omaswa, special advisor for human resources at the WHO, estimates that Gates's spending could be 5 times more beneficial if he directed his philanthropy toward addressing poverty and supporting existing health systems. This is the most common critique among knowledgeable public health experts. According to Global Justice Now, the BMGF's heavy focus on developing new vaccines detracts from other more vital health priorities, such as building resilient health systems. Unfortunately, the idea of building local institutions to support democracy and public interest is inconsistent with Gates's technology-based approach to public health. As Dr. David Legg explained to The Gray Zone, Gates has got a mechanistic view of global health in terms of looking for silver bullets. All of the things he supports are largely framed as silver bullets. That means that major issues that have been identified in the World Health Assembly are not being addressed, including, in particular, the social determinants of health and the development of health systems. University of Toronto public health professor Anne Emmanuelle Byrne wrote in 2005 that the Gates Foundation had a narrowly conceived understanding of health as the product of technical interventions divorced from economic, social, and political contexts. The Gates Foundation has long championed private sector involvement in and private sector profit-making from global health, Byrne told The Gray Zone. One of Gavi's senior representatives even reported that Bill Gates often told him in private conversations that he is vehemently against health systems because it is a complete waste of money. Katarini Storeng, researcher at Oslo's Center for Development and Environment, writes that a Gavi staffer told her that the foundation was a very loud vocal voice, saying that we do not believe in the strengthening of health systems. A former Gavi employee and HSS, health systems strengthening proponent, recounted how he and his colleagues used to roll down the HSS posters when Bill Gates came to visit the Gavi headquarters in Geneva because he is known to hate this part of Gavi's work. Gates's antipathy toward public health systems reflects a pathological, almost bigoted contempt for African institutions and science, Storing's report also notes. Gates's patterns of funding reflect his bias toward white Western institutions and his hostility toward indigenous community-based African solutions. Lindsay McGoey argues that a commitment to true equity should entail offering money directly to capable health teams based in the global South, better resourcing of their universities, their access to scientific research, and their ability to publish more extensively leading journals. Gates seems impervious to the importance of cultivating local leadership, institutions, and talent. His